WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
On Keeping the Faith tonight, we'll be talking about public policy advocacy with two guests by phone, Laura Dean Frederick and Courtney Eccles. Can you both hear me okay? Are you there? Hi, can you hear me okay on the phones?
Yes, Steve.
Very good. That sounds like Laura Dean Frederick, and Courtney Eccles is also there.
Yep, I'm here.
Very good. We're talking about public policy advocacy tonight on Keeping the Faith. And you two represent, at the present, two groups that are sort of coming together, the Protestants for the Common Good and the Community Renewal Society of Chicago. Let's begin by talking a little bit about those groups. First, the older of the two, the Community Renewal Society. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, Steve, the Community Renewal Society, as you say, is an older organization. It's been working in Chicago for 130 years, so it has a long history of working on issues related to race and poverty. Currently, the organization has three major thrusts to its work. The first is a community organizing work that goes on in churches, in congregations, helping churches understand their role in working for change and working against injustice. They also publish a magazine called The Chicago Reporter, which does investigative reporting on a variety of issues, again, related to race and poverty. And then Catalyst, which is a magazine that has to do with the well-being of public education in the Chicago area.
And now with you and Courtney on board, they're also doing advocacy in the state capital of Illinois in Springfield.
Yes, they do. With working with the people in their church groups that they have recruited for advocacy and for community organizing efforts, they every year pick three or four policy issues that they work on. Sometimes those are local. They're doing some work locally on education expulsions of young people from public schools in Chicago. But then they also do some work on state legislation. And one of the wonderful things is that PCG, Protestants for the Common Good, and Community Renewal Society have some common ground. We work on some similar issues. And so that's one of the reasons we've been talking with one another, exploring a new relationship in which we might work more closely together so that we would have the community organizing, but we would also have policy in which PCG's lobbyists are in Springfield on a regular basis, a weekly basis, and then that would be supplemented by the advocates that we have in our advocacy network, but also the advocates that would come for the Community Renewal Society Lobby Day, which they do every year in April.
And Courtney Eccles, tell us a little bit about Protestants for the Common Good. It's a very relatively new agency. How long has it been around?
Well, it's been around a little over 15 years now. We celebrated our 15th anniversary this past November. And similar to Community Renewal Society, PCG has a real focus on public policy in getting congregations and people of faith to really become advocates for those most in need. So we work on a wide variety of issues. We have what's called the Common Good Agenda, which sort of sets the tone for all the work that PCG might do each year. And we focus on economic justice issues related to the budget and income supports for families and other human service programs. We do a lot of criminal justice work, helping to keep people out of prison to get the services they need related to, you know, drug treatment, and also looking on the back end, bringing folks back into society and helping them to get jobs and to seal their records to really make a better life for themselves after coming out of prison. We do work on the environment with a number of coalitions and groups throughout the state. We worked on education. We do some work on healthcare, and then we also have worked on a number of human rights issues related to reproductive rights, civil unions, political injustice, that sort of thing. So a pretty big agenda.
Since we've now outlined a bit of what we're going to be talking about during this hour, let me give the telephone numbers. So if listeners would like to join this conversation, this is a live program every Sunday night from 5 to 6 p.m. Central Time here at WILL AM 580 and heard also at 90.9 FM for those of you who have those nice HD-capable radios. The phone numbers, if you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois 217 area code, punch in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If it's long distance, you could have a toll-free call. Just put in 1-800-222-9455. We're always eager to have listeners ask questions or make comments or agree or disagree. This is a public forum here, and we're happy to provide this service on WILL. Getting back to our guests, Laurdine Frederick, tell us a little bit about your background. What were you doing before you came to do this work for Protestants for the Common Good and now with the Community Renewal Society of Chicago?
I have a master's degree in early childhood education and worked for a number of years in direct service child care for low-income families. And sometimes when people ask me, how did you get into public policy work, I say, well, when you work with children and families that live in low-income communities and have a variety of needs in their lives, you get to advocacy very, very quickly. So that was the beginning. I spent, after leaving that direct service child care world, I did several years as a consultant with churches, helping them develop or expand or improve programs that served children and families, both children and families in congregations as well as in their wider communities. And always there was this concern about public policy and the impact that public policy had on the lives of these children and families all across the state. And eventually I just reached a point where I thought, that's what I really want to do. That's my third career, if you will. And when I had the opportunity to come to Protestants for the Common Good, I leaped forward because it was such a great opportunity to put together the practical work I had done directly with families, the consultative work I had done on behalf of families, and now working on public policy to change structures and to improve systems that affect their lives.
And Courtney Eccles, tell us, tell our listeners some of your background before coming to this public policy advocacy work.
Sure. Well, I'll have to admit my background is a bit more brief. I actually had the privilege of interning with Protestants for the Common Good when I was an undergrad. I was a social policy major, and one of the requirements was to go out in Chicago and learn a little bit about policy itself. So I was really lucky to be able to see firsthand the work that PCG was doing and to be able to be involved for a brief time. And then
What university was that?
Oh, I was at Northwestern in Evanston.
I've heard of it.
Yes, I know the Wildcats and the University of Illinois have a bit of a rivalry. But after I graduated, I had the opportunity to become a part of PCG staff, and I focused originally really on congregational outreach to set up adult education programs and engage more with clergy and lay leaders throughout the state, talking about PCG, the work that we were doing, and really encouraging involvement of people of faith. And then that sort of morphed and advanced and evolved into doing both policy work and outreach, which I think is such a wonderful combination, and I have learned a lot over the last few years. So I'm excited to be a part of PCG, and it's kind of where I got my beginnings.
And you're continuing in your education presently, as I recall, right?
Yes, I am in the process, actually, of writing my thesis on social mobility, and if all goes well, I'll have a master's by December.
Also at Northwestern.
Yes.
Very good school. We have our first caller. Let's go to line number one. Yes, you're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. My question. Okay, my life verse first.
that if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus, and shall believe in thine heart that God has raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. That's Romans 10:9. That's my life verse. Do you believe that?
Lordeen?
Do you believe that? Yes or no, please.
Lordeen, could you hear the question?
Yes, yes.
Yes, I did hear the question. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the verse very well.
Okay, I'll give it to you again. That if thou shalt confess with thy mouth the Lord Jesus, and shalt believe in thine heart that God has raised him from the dead, thou shalt be saved. That's Romans 10:9. Do you believe that, yes or no?
Yes.
I do too. Now, who is Joseph's dad, or supposedly Jesus' granddad?
I think the caller may have some interesting things to talk about, but perhaps not on this show. This show, we're talking about public policy advocacy, and he had an opportunity to talk about that and chose not to. But we're going to continue. Lordeen, let me ask you a little bit about why Protestants for the common good? Why is this group limited as opposed to being Christians, for example? You identified yourself as a Christian. Or why not interfaith? An easy question.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much for asking an easy question. The question, when Protestants for the Common Good came into being, it came in, Courtney said, 15, 16 years ago, something like that, and it was a time in which there were many voices that were speaking on behalf of Christians, and some of those voices were voices that set forth a very particular political agenda that had to do with reproductive rights, had to do with, that range of issues that we felt they were not speaking for all of us, and that there were other views in the community of faith, both in the Jewish tradition as well as Roman Catholic, as well as evangelical Christian groups, as well as Protestants, the mainline Protestants. So our effort was to be another voice in the conversation about what is the role of government in the lives of people in the country, and what is the role of faith in making decisions about political issues as well as community issues. So that's how we came into being. There was obviously, and we're still having some of those same discussions as we go forward. PCG maybe started out very clearly on some of those, what we called at that time, hot-button social issues that the religious right was talking about and that other people in the faith community were talking about. But we've gone beyond that to talk about, as Courtney said, issues around economic justice and criminal justice and environmental justice, which are part of the broader agenda of PCG.
But you are still a clear alternative voice to the Christian religious right.
Yes, yeah. Yes, definitely. I think the other thing, why not an interfaith organization? I think, again, there are several very important interfaith organizations, and we work in collaboration with them in many cases when there's an issue that we're both concerned about, that we're working on, for example, raising the minimum wage. That's a coalition that includes community activists, but it also includes interfaith groups, as well as Protestants for the Common Good, Lutheran Social Services, et cetera. So we work with other faith groups. We don't feel that we are exclusive in terms of the work that we do. We don't own this work. This is work that we do in collaboration with a number of organizations. So we look for that common ground, both the secular as well as interfaith, as well as other faith groups, to do the work that we do.
I've been happy to participate in some of those very widely supported groups that have gone to Springfield and Illinois to speak with legislators and to demonstrate support for various causes. Courtney, let me ask you, what is the reception of the legislators to you and to Lordeen when you knock on their doors, when you make an appointment to talk to them about some of these issues like raising the minimum wage? After all, most of the lobbyists they talk with are people that they can go to for major fundraising help, and nonprofits don't have that kind of money to contribute. How do they receive you? Do they listen? Do they care?
That is a really good question, and I think I would say that for the most part, you know, legislators really always have at least an open door. You know, how far you get in the conversation before they realize that they may not be in agreement or might not be so excited about the topic is another story. But at least when it comes to the conversations that Dean and I and others have in the Capitol, I mean, legislators are there to listen. And I think to a certain degree, it not only depends on the legislator, but it depends on the issue. I think when you're talking about certain hot-button issues, there are some elected officials who really appreciate having a different voice in Springfield, to be able to say that the religious community is not of one uniform opinion, and they really feel like they have a backing behind them when we're down and talking to different legislators about those types of things. And I also think that legislators really appreciate hearing the moral argument sometimes. I would imagine, I can't say for sure, but I would imagine it gets a little tiring to only talk to people who are just speaking about issues from their own self-interest, whether that be a business or an institution or what have you. And we're a little bit unique in that sense, that when we go speak to legislators, often what we're talking about is what is good for the larger group, for economic stability or for justice in general. And that's just a different message that's being communicated. And so I think people are at least welcome to discussing with us whether we end up disagreeing or agreeing. And the thing I would add even more so to that is while we are usually well-received, constituents always have a place to be heard. And so that's why Laura Dean and I and PCG feel really strongly about engaging people across the state, people of faith across the state, to come down and meet their legislators or meet their legislators in their district offices, because if you're a constituent, there's almost always an open door for you to be heard and to engage in a discussion with your elected official.
Let me take a minute to reintroduce our topic today and our guest. We're talking about public policy advocacy by two groups that have recently joined together. And are exploring further alliances. The Protestants for the Common Good, which is a statewide organization in Illinois, and the Community Renewal Society of Chicago. The CRS has been around for 130 years, and the Protestants for the Common Good only the last 15, but they found common ground and are working together. And Laura Dean Frederick and Courtney Eccles are two of the folks on the staff of PCG, who are now often representing both groups in the capital of Illinois, dealing with these public policy issues. Let me give the phone numbers again if you'd like to talk with us on that topic, ask questions, or make a comment. Do call us, 333-9455 in the 217 area code in the Champaign-Urbana, Illinois listening area. If you're listening farther away, 1-800-222-9455. And of course, I know we have many listeners who listen to this as an archive program, and if you're not able to hear all of it live and want to hear the rest of it, you can go in a week or so and simply go to the WILO website. That's will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith. And just leave the G off of keeping, and you'll see all our back programs, and you can listen via your computer or other device at your convenience. Of course, also, we know we have listeners live on the public radio app on many, many devices. If you're listening in that way, you may call us on the toll-free line. If you're listening to the public radio app live, you may call us 1-800-222-9455. That's in the continental U.S. I know we do have international listeners as well. But do give us a call if you have a comment or question on our topic for today. Let's talk a little bit about what happens when you do gather people together. And you have this advocacy network, I know, in the Protestants for the Common Good. How are those people, how do they learn about that opportunity? And how do you help them be advocates for some of these moral issues? Let's go to Laura Dean.
We have a sign-up on our website. If you want to be a member of the Advocacy Network, you can simply go to our website, thecommongood.org, and you'll find a place that you can sign up. And over 300 people, about 350 people, have joined the Advocacy Network since we launched it almost 2 years ago now. So they do. We work with them in a variety of ways. One is that we send direct emails to them on a fairly regular basis, talking about issues that are coming up, or events that we are sponsoring or participating in at Protestants for the Common Good, and that gives them opportunities that they could learn some things. They could come to an education event, et cetera. On Tuesday, just this next week, on the 14th, we're going to be having a regional training, which is going to be in the Arlington Heights area. We had one in Chicago in April. We're having one in Arlington Heights in August. And then we hope in September or early October we'll have one in mid-state somewhere. And so we do some training, help people sort of get in touch with some of their own advocacy expertise, because people sometimes don't recognize that they have some advocacy experience that they can put to good use as a part of this network and a part of being involved in public policy advocacy, and then sort of doing some teaching. We do it in an interactive, fun way, but we talk about what the legislative process is like in Springfield, how they can become involved in that, and how they can influence legislators. After that's over, then we stay in touch with them, again, through email and phone conversation. But we also hope that they will tell us things that are going on in their communities and help us learn about what's happening in districts, because much of the legislative work, while Springfield gets all the attention, much of the legislative work is actually done, the groundwork is actually done in districts. So we're trying to recruit people from across the state so that we have people in eventually all of the legislative districts who would then be able to talk to their legislators about important issues.
Courtney Eccles, you were telling us earlier about your currently being involved in a master's degree program at Northwestern. How do people in your peer group respond when you tell them about your work, your full-time job, your being a lobbyist?
Sure. Well, I think there are sort of two different reactions, perhaps. One is just the idea of being part of a progressive religious organization, and I think folks find that really exciting. And then to add to that layer, it's a progressive religious organization that does lobbying work, and those things just don't normally go together. But it's one of those situations where you just explain to folks that lobbying sometimes has kind of a bad rap, but what it really means and what the job really entails is speaking to legislators, and it's mostly about education, because there are thousands of bills that get introduced each session in Springfield, and there are some issues that we care really deeply about that we're really educated on. And so much of the work involves talking to legislators and explaining the issue to them, why it's important, why it makes a difference, and really preparing them to vote either yes or no, depending on what you're hoping to gain from them. And so I think just helping people understand that lobbyists aren't all high-powered individuals with a lot of money, but there's a whole group of us who are really working for very different issues is sometimes kind of enlightening.
Martin Frederick, let's talk a little bit about some specific issues that you and Courtney have gone to talk to legislators about in the last few months, and let us know where they stand, how the response was, how the vote was. What are some of the high points, the really key issues that you've brought people to Springfield to talk about?
We mentioned earlier the minimum wage. That's come up a couple of times, so perhaps it would be helpful if I started there.
That'd be great.
There's a minimum wage bill that was introduced two legislative sessions ago in 2011 that called for raising the Illinois minimum wage from $8.25 an hour gradually over a four-year period to about 1060 an hour, which would be the historic level of the minimum wage if, in fact, the minimum wage had kept up with inflation over the years of its existence. We've had a minimum wage for a long time, but it's not kept up with
cost of living.
Of inflation.
Sure.
So that bill has been a difficult bill, quite frankly. Many legislators say, look, I'm with you in spirit. I think everybody should make more money. And, yes, I'm very concerned about people who are low-wage workers, people who make minimum wage. But this is just not the right time. This is a difficult economy we've got, and we're worried about job loss. And so it's sometimes been difficult to get legislators to see beyond that immediate concern, which is a concern for all of us, of course. So we've been working for the past 2 years, talking to legislators, bringing people to Springfield, coaching people who came to Springfield on their own, just to help them find their legislators, be able to talk to their legislators about this important issue. The bill at this present moment did pass out of committee in the Senate just before we adjourned in May, and advocates are working over the summer, meeting with legislators, talking with Senator Kimberly Lightfoot, who is the chief sponsor of the bill, and developing strategy. We hope that it might come up in the veto session at the end of November or early December, but we don't know that. We don't have any guarantee of that, of course. I think one of the things about minimum wage that we try to go back to Courtney's point about educating legislators is that if we raise the minimum wage, there are two things that happen along with that raise of minimum wage. It means low-income families have more money to spend on their basic necessities. So that is economic activity that happens right there in the communities where they live.
And low-income people do spend things on necessities of life rather than, say, putting it in an investment somewhere.
That's true, because they don't have enough money to invest, unfortunately, and they don't take expensive vacations. They can't afford them, but they buy things like clothes for their kids to go to school. They buy groceries. They pay rent. They pay for transportation in the community, and most of that happens right there in the community. In addition to that, as they're spending their money, slightly higher money in the community, that begins to churn the economic cycle so that suddenly store owners, business owners are beginning to say, oh, my goodness, we've got more customers, we've got more demand for our product, for our merchandise, we need to add some positions. And so they begin to create jobs that will also help the economy and help the communities in which low-wage workers live and work. The estimate from the Economic Policy Institute in Washington is that the raising the minimum wage in Illinois would create about 20,000 jobs over a four-year period. It wouldn't happen immediately, of course, but over 4 years it would bring new money into the local economy and create jobs at the same time.
We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program this afternoon, talking about public policy advocacy with our guests, Laura Dean Frederick and Courtney Eccles from Protestants for the Common Good, and also working with the Community Renewal Society of Chicago. We'll get back to them in just a moment. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. You are listening to AM 580 WILL and 90.9 FM HD3 in Urbana. Again, a reminder, this program can be heard in the archives of WILL at your convenience. By all of our past programs are there, almost all of them, except some of the very first couple years. You can go to will.illinois.edu/keepingthefaith and listen at your convenience. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Michael Trout. He is the director of the Infant Parent Institute. And he's recently come out with a very interesting CD called The Hope-Filled Parent. It's meditations of foster and adoptive parents on children who have been harmed. We'll be talking with Michael Trout next Sunday, August 19, here on AM 580 at 5 o'clock. On August 26th, the SALT Project will be presented to us by Elizabeth Meyer Bolton, one of the originators of that very interesting project of progressive Christian folks trying to find ways to communicate best with younger generations. On September 2nd, we have two guests who will be in the studio with guest host Don Nolan. Fatima Sewell and Nina Almuti will be talking about their lives as Palestinian refugees. That'll be September 2nd here. So two folks will be sharing their own personal experience. Those are some of the programs coming up ahead on Keeping the Faith. Hope you can listen at your convenience. The University YMCA has been a longtime supporter of Keeping the Faith, and their big program, Dump and Run, is coming to a grand finish here for this year. And they're having their big sale Saturday, August 25th. And they'll be selling things that students and others have contributed from this Champaign-Urbana community to the Y. The Y has stored them over the summer. They'll be sorted and put out in very easy-to-see ways at the University Stock Pavilion, University of Illinois Stock Pavilion on Pennsylvania Avenue, just a couple blocks east of Memorial Stadium. That'll be Saturday, August 25th from 8 to 4 p.m. There'll be a $2 admission charge that first day, and most people get such bargains, they're very happy to pay the $2 to get in. The Y is still collecting things, and starting this Wednesday, August 15, you may take things directly to the Stock Pavilion there on Pennsylvania Avenue, 8 to 10 in the morning and then 4 to 7 in the evening. That's Wednesday, August 15, Thursday the 16th, Friday the 17th, and then Saturday the morning, 9 to 12. Again, the hours during the week, 8 to 10 and 4 to 7. What do they take? Almost everything. Not large appliances, but if you have questions, you can call the Y, 337-1500 and area code 217. So that's a big dump and run. The sale again, August 25th from 8 to 4, and then Sunday, August 26th from 11 to 4. Those 2 days at the University of Illinois Stock Pavilion. A great way for incoming students and others in the community to find some real bargains. There's everything from furniture to clothes to TVs to sound systems to kitchenware, things for apartments and houses. So take advantage of the sale. And if you have those things to contribute, it really helps the Y, earns them a little bit of money, and people get great bargains, and it keeps a lot of things out of the waste stream. Well, let's get back to our guests on Keeping the Faith today. We're talking about public policy issues and advocacy. Let's go to line number one. We have another caller. Yes. You're on the air.
How about going to list two or three of the policy things that are under consideration now so that, in general, the public can be informed?
Laura Dean, you want to start?
Well, certainly the minimum wage.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you for that question. The caller wanted to go off the air to listen. Go ahead.
Certainly the minimum wage effort, the campaign we've been involved in for the past 2 years, is going to continue until we're successful. We're also one of the groups that works on state budget issues. We're very concerned about the fact that we need more revenue in the state of Illinois in order to pay our bills on time and to provide the services that all of us in Illinois feel are important for our citizens. For the people who live and work and raise families in Illinois. So we've worked over the years on revenue, on the revenue side of the budget, trying to prevent cuts to public education, human services, public safety, and health care. And that has certainly had mixed results, but that work will continue. As we thought about things like expanding the sales tax, perhaps, or restructuring the state debt, or the thing that did pass this year, which was the additional tax on cigarettes, which is expected to raise some significant dollars that will help prevent further cuts to Medicaid. So there's all that on the budget. Eventually, we think, the real answer for Illinois is tax fairness. And so PCG, as well as Community Renewal Society and many other agencies across the state, service providers as well as advocacy organizations, are beginning a campaign for a graduated tax rate. It will be a long-term campaign, but that campaign is going to begin this year. We also do work on criminal justice issues. There's a ceiling bill which would expand the number of felony levels that people who have served their time and have come out of prison and then have no further involvement with the criminal justice system for 4 years would then be able to go to a judge and ask that their records be sealed so that they would have more opportunities for employment and housing and education, things like that. So those are some of the things that are coming up. I think Courtney also would be happy to talk about a couple of other issues that we'll be working on.
Yeah, definitely. One of the areas that we've started doing an increasing amount of work in is the environment. We partner up with environmental organizations throughout the state, and I would say probably our biggest focus going into this fall and the next legislative session is to work on state fracking regulations. And I know you've had folks come and perhaps they've talked about this issue before, but fracking or hydraulic fracturing is the process by which natural gas is extracted from the ground. And in the past couple of years, it's been noted that Illinois has potentially lots of natural gas under a couple of its aquifers. And so different large companies, national and I think even some international, have been leasing land in Illinois to do what's called high-volume fracking. And it involves drilling a well vertically and then horizontally a couple thousand feet underground and then pumping in millions of gallons of water at a pretty high pressure and creating these little fissures that cause the natural gas to come back up. And at this point, Illinois doesn't have any regulations on the books for this specific type of fracking. And so what we've been working with legislators and environmental groups to create some regulations. And I know Senator Frerichs in the Champaign area has sponsored legislation on this, both this last session and the year before that. And that legislation has passed out of the Senate and been stalled in the House. And so what's actually happened is because we are getting these land leases, but we still don't have any regulations on the books, there's actually an amendment that's been added to the bill that would require or put in place a moratorium, just basically saying that until we get strong regulations in place passed by the state legislature, we shouldn't do any of this drilling before then. So we're working with folks to try and pass that moratorium and simultaneously work with the industry to get really strong regulations in place so that we can keep our water safe and not pollute it. So that's one of the big environmental issues that we'll be working on this fall and this spring.
Courtney, before you go on to any others, we do have another caller waiting. I don't want this person to wait too long. Let's go to line number three. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Well, since you're mentioning aquifers, I wanted to mention that there's a wide coalition of groups that's just forming here about the aquifer, Muhammad Aquifer, and this idea that Clinton landfill is going to be turned into a disposal site for polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs. And there actually is a House hearing in Monticello this coming Thursday at 1 o'clock. You can check, I guess, Naomi Jacobson's website or the Farm Bureau. But it's Faith in Action and affiliated groups that are working on this here. So I thought it was kind of ironic that I was going to call about that because I really think it's a broad spectrum of people should make their opinions aware to the legislators and to the business too, if they want to, aerial disposal services. But
Let me repeat, that's in Monticello, Illinois. This program, of course, is heard in Indiana as well as Illinois.
Okay, right.
So let me just clarify that. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's about this Muhammad Aquifer, which is underneath this whole area here. And so it's an important issue. I didn't really realize that that much water was involved in the hydraulic fracturing. And they use chemicals, too, they put in. But I wanted to make a broader point about just the religious activism. And this is not the state level. This is the federal level. I just alert you to the nuns on the bus. I don't know whether you'll be doing an interview with Network. These are Catholic nuns who actually have the bishops behind them attacking the Ryan budget. They were doing this earlier this summer, and I think they might have a renewal of energy now that he's the VP pick. But they're doing it specifically because Ryan cites his Catholicism as a reason for his economics or something, which they found totally ironic. So just the broader idea of religious involvement from a different direction than the one we usually hear about. I appreciate it. Any comments? That obviously is at the federal level, and I just thought it was timely this weekend. So
thanks for sharing.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
Appreciate the call. Again, the numbers 333-9455 in the 217 area code in Champaign Urbana, Illinois, where WILL's studio is located. If it's long distance, 1-800-222-9455. Let's get back to our two guests, Lardine Frederick and Courtney Eccles, from the Community Renewal Society and Protestants for the Common Good, who are actively involved in public policy advocacy. And again, the Protestants for the Common Good website, if you'd like information on joining the advocacy network and receiving training on how to do that best, thecommongood.org. We'll let you see how to do that. Courtney, did you have another issue you were going to share? One of our prior callers had questioned what some of the current issues are that are still on legislators' desks that you guys are concerned about.
Well, I think we discussed minimum wage and ceiling and some environmental issues, and then obviously, as Laura Dean mentioned, the budget and the issues related to income supports and human services are always, always, always something that we try to work on and keep people aware of. And of course, that relates to the tax structure and sort of a long-term solution. I actually, if you'll let me, would love to point out to listeners about a victory that we just found out about this past Friday, because it's always nice to have victories in this type of work. One of the things that we've been opposing this past legislative session was a coal-to-gas plant called Leucadia that would be put up in Chicago. And legislation moving that process forward did pass out of the General Assembly this spring, but we just found out on Friday, after a lot of work and grassroots efforts over the summer, that the governor vetoed that legislation for a number of reasons. And we're really excited about the fact that Chicago, in which we just got two coal plants to shut down, will not become the new home to yet another plant. So I wanted to share that as something that we worked on and we're excited is not moving forward.
Laura Dean Frederick, let me ask you a broader question. For listeners who might like a little beginning education on how best to approach their own legislators about issues they care about, moral issues of whatever sort, what do you do in the training to help people just begin to get an idea of how best to do that?
Well, there's several things that we do. First of all, we have a toolkit, and we are happy to make that available to anybody who gets in touch with us and says they'd like to see it. But it walks through the process of how you get in touch with your legislators, and there's several ways to do that. Certainly the most powerful way is face-to-face, either going to your legislator's district office and meeting with that individual there. It's close to home. You don't have to drive to Springfield to do that. It's easier to get an appointment. It's not as hectic as the state capitol is. But that's a really good place to have a meeting with a legislator about one issue or, you know, maybe more than one. But usually you try to have a meeting about one issue, maybe two. It just keeps things a little easier to keep track of if you just do two issues or one. You can also go to Springfield. And again, you can call the legislator's staff person and you can make an appointment to see your senator or your representative while you're in Springfield. And again, you have the same opportunity to talk with them about a particular bill or a particular concern you have. Frankly, when you meet in Springfield, legislators are particularly interested in active legislation, so bill numbers are important. And if I could just digress a little bit, on our website in the section called Resources, for those people who want to see a list of the public policy issues we're working on, you can go to Resources, and there's a list of our legislative priorities for 2012. And we update that fairly regularly so that you can see the bill numbers and the issues that we're working on at any particular time. The other way you talk to a legislator is you can make a phone call. You probably won't talk directly with the legislator, but you'll talk with that person's staff. And believe me, the staff are very conscientious about writing down names and addresses and phone numbers and the opinion of the caller. Please vote for this bill or please vote against that bill. And again, it's helpful to have a bill number or at least to have the name of the bill, like minimum wage increase. They would recognize that, or fracturing. They would recognize that even if you don't have the bill number. You can send emails. You can write letters. You can even set up petitions and have a lot of people sign a petition about a particular issue. I would say that face-to-face is the most powerful, and then phone calls, and then emails, written letters. I think petitions, you have to have a lot of signatures to get the legislators' attention. But those other things are easier to do than petitions in many ways, and so I encourage people to consider getting the email address of your House member, your Senate member, and feel free to let that individual, your representatives, know your opinion on current legislation.
The website where Laurentine was mentioning there's a list of priorities is under resources and bill numbers and so forth. The website is thecommongood.org.
That's correct.
Courtney, let me ask you, given your relative youth, which you've talked with us about, you're currently a grad student as well as being full-time employed, would you talk to a legislator, a senator, say, who is in his 60s or even older? I'm thinking of this verse from the Bible, let no one despise your youth. I mean, is it that, that Paul said to a young follower, do you have people who sort of say, what can you possibly tell me? You're so young.
Well, I'll be completely honest and say I've never had anyone say that to my face. Who knows what they might be thinking after I walk out of the office. But I think that regardless of one's age or one's gender, the best thing you can do when you go to speak to a legislator, especially if you're coming in as a lobbyist representing an organization, is to just be informed. And so I usually approach our elected officials just to let them know I want to talk about a particular issue. As Laura Dean said, know the bill number, and I like to hand them a fact sheet right off the bat and then just engage in a conversation for whatever time I have. Sometimes legislators can talk to you for 1 minute, and you've got to get your most important points across right away, and other times they've got 10 or 15 minutes, and you can really engage in a dialogue about the issue and what it means and answer any questions. But I guess my hope is that I may be young and I may look young, but hopefully I know what I'm talking about enough to engage them and convince them of whatever it is that I'm saying.
And just to add to what Courtney said, I think to go back to a point that she made earlier, and that is constituents always will find an open door. And I just think that's so important for people to realize this work may sound mysterious and complicated and difficult, but it's like any important work that we do in our communities, with our families, in our jobs. It's a learning process, and you will learn how to do it, and it's not nearly as difficult as you might think it is. You just take it a step at a time, and the main thing is just to be willing to talk to a legislator about something you care deeply about. And so my suggestion is don't just go to a legislator's office to drop in and say hello, though that's a lovely thing to do. The staff would be thrilled because it's nice to have people to stop in and say hello, but to really come in to talk about something that's important to you, whether it's increased funding for child care or improvement in your community school. Personal stories are so powerful, and if you can tell a story about how a particular issue is affecting your community, your family, the people who live next door to you, the school, that is something that legislators need to hear, and they want to hear it. Again, they may or may not agree with your particular position, but those stories stay with the legislator long after somebody like me walks out of the office, because the constituent with a story is a powerful force in the legislative process.
We're down to our last 6 or 7 minutes here on Keeping the Faith. You are listening to WILL AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD3. You may be listening on our live website, will.illinois.edu/AM. We do have time for a call or two if you make your question or comment short. Again, the number's 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. Are there some things that either of you wanted to make sure you got out this hour that I haven't asked about?
Could I, Steve, really quickly?
Sure.
We had a wonderful question about the issues that are coming up for folks to really know what issues they might be able to work on in the coming months. And I would just love to give folks the dates of different the veto session, which is this November. We will certainly be in Springfield and may very well be trying to organize a group of folks to come down. And those dates are the last week of November, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and the first week of December, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And that's when the legislators will come back to Springfield, and it will be after the election. So many say that they might take up some issues and vote on things that they didn't want to vote on before the election. And then there's also going to be presumably a couple of weeks in January, or at least a few days in January, right before the current legislature leaves for the next set of folks to come in. And so people don't need to wait until the spring to get engaged. We'd love to work with folks this fall and this winter as well on some issues that are still alive and still standing.
And how could people who'd like to be a part of that contact you?
Well, if they want to visit our website, and again, the Advocacy Network is our best way to know who's really interested in that kind of work. But otherwise, of course, people are welcome to call myself or Laura Dean at any time. And we'll send out emails and alerts notifying folks about different lobby days that we may organize.
And your office phone number?
Go ahead.
Laura Dean?
312-673-3846, and that's a direct line. 312-673-3846.
And Courtney?
Mine is just slightly different. It's 312-673-3832.
I'll repeat that.
Laura Dean and I...
I'll repeat that. Courtney Eccles, 312-673-3832. Laura Dean, 312-673-3846. And you were starting to say something else, Courtney?
I was just going to say that we talk all the time, and so it doesn't matter whose number you call. If you're interested in working with us, we'll certainly know about it.
Let's talk a little bit about who you encounter when you go to Springfield. You mentioned, yes, you can make an appointment with your legislator, but they also have staffs who advise them. Is it helpful ever to talk to their staffs? I know both of you do that.
I would say that you should always talk with staff if you have that opportunity. First of all, they have they're a good way to get information to the legislator, whether it's a senator or a representative. Because they're in touch with that elected official on a daily basis, on an hourly basis. Sometimes when something's very urgent, they can send an email to the senator or to the representative as they're sitting on the floor in the chamber in the Capitol. But they also can answer basic questions, and so they will be interested in getting to know people who come in, particularly constituents, and they will be happy to help set up an appointment, but also to relay information or to get information from the representative. Sometimes I've talked with them and said, do you know how he's going to vote on this? And he or she might say, well, no, I don't, but I'll check on that. And sometimes they're able to call me back and give me that information. Not always, but sometimes. So definitely get to know staff. They can help you figure out where the senator is, because the senator may be in some kind of a meeting of the Democrats or the Republicans, which makes it you can't interrupt those. But if there's a committee hearing, you can go to that committee hearing and go into the committee room to listen to the debate that's going on. And then as the committee is winding up its work, you slip out into the hallway and you wait for the senator or the representative to come out, and you have an opportunity to talk to them there. So, yes, staff are very helpful. In addition to that, there are Democratic staff and Republican staff that work with the House and work with the Senate, and sometimes groups or individuals can get meetings with those staff because they have a bigger picture of the legislative process, and you can also meet with those individuals.
We're down to the last minute or so. Any surprises in your time being an advocate for these kind of policies? Lardine?
I would say one surprise is just what wonderful people there are in Springfield to work with. The other lobbyists for not-for-profit advocacy organizations, they're generous with their time. They're willing to work with you. They really are helpful and anxious to be in coalition with people of faith. So I would say, I'm not sure that's a surprise, but is one of the things I really value about being in Springfield.
And Courtney, anything you want to add in 30 seconds?
Sure. I would just say that it's work that takes time, and sometimes it takes a little more time than we would all like, but it's so exciting to be part of these great coalitions and to do this good work. And when you win, it's just a wonderful, wonderful feeling.
Let me thank our guests, Lardine Frederick and Courtney Eccles from Protestants for the Common Good and the Community Renewal Society of Chicago, and talking about public policy advocacy here on Keeping the Faith. Thank you both.
Thank you, Steve.
Let me remind listeners of coming up at the University Y, sponsored the Great Dump and Run Sale is coming up a week from Saturday, August 25th, from 8 till 4. It's $2 to get in. You'll find thousands of items that will be helpful to not only students who are setting up apartments and dorms, but other people who are looking for bargains. Some real finds are there, everything from books and CDs and DVDs and furniture and clothes and electronics and kitchen goods, all those things for sale that Saturday. Then the next day, Sunday, August 26th, things that are left will be what you can put in a bag for $3, and furniture will be half price. That'll be from 11 to 4 on Sunday, August 26. And then after 4:30 that day, everything is free. So, boy, is that a bargain. They're still collecting for Dump and Run. That'll be August 15 from 8 to 10 and from 4 to 7 at the Stock Pavilion. You can just drive right in, and they'll help you unload it. Stuff you have to donate, August 15, 16, and 17, 8 to 10 and 4 to 7, Saturday from 9 to 12 in the morning. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, Michael Trout will be our guest. He's the director of the Infant Parent Institute, and he'll be talking about children who have been harmed. And he has some meditations that are very helpful for people who are dealing with those kind of kids. I'm Steve Shoemaker. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the wall memory works? Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580. This is Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3, Urbana.
At this point,